So if I had to give you a more accurate title for this sermon, it would be Going Deep. Because as the week went on and I was kind of living with these two scriptures, I was going to try and tie them together about hearing God's word and responding to it. I'm still kind of going to do that. But at some point during the week, it suddenly hit me. There was one word that both these readings share, and that's the word deep. In the story of Jesus calling the disciples, even though they've had no luck, no success in their fishing up to this point, Jesus says to Simon Peter, "All right, now row out into deep waters." They've been in the shallows for Jesus to preach to the crowd on the shore. He says to Peter and James and John, "Row out into the deep water and cast your nets." Now, of course, that's probably pretty good practical advice for fishing, especially after all the people being in the shallows stirring things up. But it particularly struck me when I noticed in the psalm, there's a line in the psalm as it's praising God that says to God, "You were with me in deep trouble, and you gave me life again. You made me live again." Deep waters. Waters so deep they're up to your neck and you're in deep trouble. Is there some common theme here in these two readings about God's call to us and where we meet God? And I encourage you to think about the idea of deep waters beyond the literal, although as I mentioned, there are times in life when it feels like the water of our lives is rising and we're in deep water, or deep trouble. But the idea that God often calls us to go to the deep waters, to places that are not comfortable and familiar, to places that might even seem a little dangerous. I mean, what's in that deep water? I don't know. I can't see the bottom. We might drown. Don't know what kind of creatures are swimming around in the dark there of those deep waters. And yet, Jesus says, row out into the deep water. That's where the fish are. Even if it brings deep trouble. Or in your own life, it's in the times of trouble, despair, darkness, that we really sense God's presence. It can be harder to sense God when everything is going great. We get lulled into the illusion of things always being great. It's in the moments of deep trouble when we ourselves are in the deep waters that we might best sense God. So all this got me thinking about people being called as they follow Christ to go to deep waters, to dangerous places, uncomfortable places, to do things they might not want to do. I'm sort of building upon last week's sermon about expectations, others than our own, that can get in the way. And so that led me to think about people in the past who have gone into the deep waters. And so I want to share with you some stories and thoughts about these people. One of the first people I thought of was Henry Nouwen. And many of you, I'm sure, have read and enjoyed Henry Nouwen. You know, Henry Nouwen was a well-known professor of spirituality at Harvard and Yale and Notre Dame, and then decided, this was about 10 years before he died, that he was doing a lot of talking about spirituality, but not living it. And so he totally changed his life, moved into a community up in Canada that serves the physically and mentally challenged, and said afterwards it was one of the most difficult things he ever did, but also he found a joy and a purpose that he had never known before. But I wanted to share just a few words from Henry Nouwen that I think relate to to deep waters and going into the deep waters. He writes this, compassion means to become close to the one who suffers. But we can come close to another person only when we are willing to become vulnerable ourselves. A compassionate person says, I am your brother, I am your sister, I am human, fragile, and mortal, just like you. I am not scandalized by your tears, nor afraid of your pain. I too have wept, I too have felt pain. We can be with the other only when the other ceases to be, quote, other, and becomes like us. It might be a description of deep waters. I don't know if you've ever heard of Bishop Patrick Byrne, but Patrick Byrne was ordained a priest in Baltimore in 1915. 1 week later, he joined the Mary Knoll Fathers and Brothers. He served in a variety of offices before being assigned in 1923 to establish the first mission in Korea. In 1927, he was named Prefect Apostolic of Pyongyang. He embarked in 1937 on a new mission in Japan. For 3 years, he served in Kyoto. With the outbreak of World War II, many American missionaries in Japan were deported or imprisoned, and Father Byrne was held in house arrest. In 1947, he returned to Korea. And in 1949, he was consecrated as a bishop. He was in Seoul when the Northern Communists invaded, launching the Korean War. Arrested on July 2nd, he was forced to march north, crossing through his former Mary Knoll territory to Pyongyang, where he was put on trial. Following this, he was forced to join 800 other prisoners on a death march to the north, lasting 4 months through snow and with little food or shelter. Father Byrne contracted pneumonia and died on November 25, 1950. He was buried simply in his cassock. His dying words were, I regard this privilege of having suffered for Christ with all of you as the greatest of my life. Row out into deep waters. During the period of 1976 to 1983, a military dictatorship in Argentina conducted a dirty war against, quote, subversives and dissidents. Thousands of civilians were killed, many more, quote, disappeared. Abducted by the military, never to be seen again. Two French nuns, sisters Alicia Doman and Leonie Duquette, were among them. Both were members of the Toulouse Institute of the Sisters of Foreign Mission. These women were among the many foreign missionaries who came to work in Latin America in the 1960s. While at first they engaged in traditional ministries, by 1969, they had moved out of their convent and into an urban shantytown to share the life of the poor. Sister Alicia became involved with the Mothers of the Disappeared, who gathered in the central plaza each day holding photographs of their missing children, offering a silent rebuke to the military regime. On December 8, 1977, she and 11 other women were seized. Her housemate, Sister Leonie, was also picked up. Though neither of them was ever seen again, later reports confirmed they had been tortured and then tossed from an airplane over the Atlantic Ocean. When Sister Alicia moved into that shanty town, she wrote this, I didn't come here to tell the people what they had to do, but in order that we could help each other and share life's joys and sorrows. Row into the deep water. Eddie Hillesum was a young Jewish woman who lived in Amsterdam during the Nazi occupation and who died as one of the millions of victims of the Holocaust. Her public life left little trace. This is in contrast with her well-documented inner life. From the day Dutch Jews were ordered to wear a yellow star up to the day when she was put aboard a cattle car for Poland, Eddie consecrated herself to an ambitious task to bear witness to the inviolable power of love and to reconcile her keen sensitivity to suffering with her appreciation for the beauty of existence. All this is recorded in a meticulous diary published years after her death. She identified with no particular religious tradition. She believed the most important task was to hold fast to the encounter with God and her soul and other people, to affirm the meaning of life in the face of all evidence to the contrary. Gradually, as the net of persecution drew tighter, her diary became a prayer to God. When she knew she would be deported, she accepted this fate and this calling to be present at the heart of suffering, to be, in her words, the thinking heart of the concentration camp. She was deported to Auschwitz on September 7, 1943, and died there on November 30th, at the age of 29. Row out into deep waters. In November 1938, the Kristallnacht pogrom in Germany offered the world a brazen display of Nazi persecution of the Jews. Many church officials turned a blind eye, but not Bernard Lichtenberg, provost of St. Hedwig's Cathedral. He condemned the attack and from then on regularly prayed publicly for the Jews and other victims of persecution. He later denounced the Nazi policy of euthanasia. In a letter to the chief physician of the state, he wrote, quote, "As a human being, a Christian, a priest, and a German, I demand of you that you answer for the crimes that have been perpetrated at your bidding and with your consent, and which will call forth the vengeance of the Lord on the heads of the German people." In October 1941, the Gestapo raided his home. They found a sermon he had planned to deliver, which denounced the Reich Minister of Propaganda's claim that anyone greeting a Jew on the street was guilty of treason. Bernard Lichtenberg had intended to remind his flock of Christ's commandment, "You shall love your neighbor as yourself." He was arrested and served 2 years in Tegel prison. When the Gestapo offered to free him if he would refrain from preaching, he asked instead to be deported to Poland with the Jews. He was sent to Dachau concentration camp, but fell ill and died in transit on November 5th, 1943. He was beatified by the Roman Catholic Church in 1996. Row out into deep waters. And the mention there of Bernard Lichtenberg being in Tegel prison reminded me of probably the most famous person who was imprisoned by the Nazis at that prison, Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Bonhoeffer, who, as you probably know, or may know, came to this country before World War II had started, as it was beginning, and was given the choice to stay here as a professor, and chose instead to return to Germany, knowing what was going on, knowing really prophetically what was going to happen. But he said, if I don't share in this time of suffering with my fellow citizens, how will I be able to go back to help them recover after this is over? So he went back. He did get involved, somewhat reluctantly, because of his Christian belief in love, in a plot to assassinate Adolf Hitler, a plot that failed, a plot whose participants all were rounded up and sent to prison. And as you may know, Bonhoeffer was executed just a few weeks before the end of the war in April 1945. He wrote wonderful letters and papers from prison. If you've never read Bonhoeffer's letters and papers from prison, they're not the easiest to read, but there's some great spiritual wisdom in here, including this that I was reminded of, again, by our story and by these other stories. Bonhoeffer was writing this in July 1944 from prison. "I'm still discovering right up to this moment that it's only by living completely in this world that one learns to have faith. One must completely abandon any attempt to make something of oneself, whether it be a saint or a converted sinner or a churchman, a righteous man or an unrighteous one, a sick man or a healthy one. By this worldliness, I mean living unreservedly in life's duties, problems, successes and failures, experiences and perplexities. In so doing, we throw ourselves completely into the arms of God, taking seriously not only our own sufferings, but those of God in the world. That could be a description of deep waters, couldn't it? I believe God calls all of us who are followers of Christ, who want to be followers of Christ, to leave the comfortable, shallow waters, to mature out of the nursery, as J. Philip Newell, whose book we're reading on Wednesday nights, would say, to row out into deep waters, maybe even deep trouble. Not because it is easy or comfortable, but because that's where the fish are. That's where our fellow human beings reside. That's where we are called to go.